Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's a gas!
It's a $700 million gas power plant promising a reliable energy source and jobs for Superior. But would it continue to feed our addiction to fossil fuel?
Minnesota Power and Dairy Lynch have been kind of framing the narrative as this is like a bridge fuel that is a lot cleaner than coal, but they're leaving out the emissions that are generated and the health risks.
Plus, he's got a tugboat named for him and his great-granddad, and he's immortalized the boats of Two Harbors and Superior in song. We'll catch up with 12-year-old composer Eddie Ojard. Those stories and a regional news and review after this.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's a gas!
It's a $700 million gas power plant promising a reliable energy source and jobs for Superior. But would it continue to feed our addiction to fossil fuel?
We see it again as renewable enabling. It can go right back offline when the wind picks up or the sun comes out.
Plus, he's got a tugboat named for him and his great-granddad. And he's immortalized the boats of Two Harbors and Superior in song. We'll catch up with 12-year-old composer Eddie Ojard. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. It's a $700 million project for Superior that promises to bring a more reliable, cleaner energy source to the region and, of course, jobs. But critics say it also continues to promote reliance on fossil fuels, ignoring basic concerns about climate change. It is the 625-megawatt Nemadji Trail Energy Center, or NTEC, planned for Superior by 2025. It would be operated jointly by Minnesota Power and La Crosse-based Dairyland Power, and we'll hear from representatives from those two firms in a bit. But first, the environmentalist side. Joining us are two from the Sierra Club, Jenna Yako and Jadine Sonata. Welcome to Simply Superior, Jenna and Jadine.
Thank you so much for having us.
So let's start out talking about natural gas. While natural gas is not as clean as solar or wind energy, it is one of the cleaner fossil fuels, right?
This is Jadine, and yeah, I can take that. So we actually like to talk about gas not as natural. That's often a term that the industry uses to hide the fact that it's really just a fossil fuel. And oftentimes they'll kind of tout it as clean, reliable energy as part of a transition fuel. Actually, there are a lot of really impactful upstream emissions of methane throughout the extraction and transportation process that pose some significant threats to climate change through greenhouse gas release. So when you take into account...
Well, actually, let me pick up on your very first point. If it's not natural gas, and I've been using the term for some time, so if I'm guilty of it, so be it. So what is it? If it isn't natural gas, is it the methane that might be affiliated with cows? Or what is it? Is it naturally occurring, or is this stuff that human beings make?
Yeah, natural is just kind of a descriptor, and it is gas that is existing in the world. You could make a claim that most anything is natural that we're finding, you know, in the ground, but you could say the same about oil or coal, and this gas can be violently extracted from the ground. There's a lot of harmful chemicals that are used in that process oftentimes, and the methane that you mentioned is a really potent greenhouse gas, more than 80 times as powerful as carbon dioxide when we're talking about warming, and that's one of the major concerns with climate change. So, Jen, I don't know if you would like to add anything on to that.
Sure. I can add a little bit about the kind of the technical pieces about fracked gas. Hydraulic fracturing or fracking has really transformed the fossil fuel industry and has made gas really one of our largest threats to climate and has fueled the climate crisis. pro-fracking lobbyists like to claim that burning fracked gas is a lot cleaner than burning coal. So like Minnesota Power and Dairyland have been kind of framing the narrative as this is like a bridge fuel that is a lot cleaner than coal, but they're leaving out the emissions that are generated and the health risks that are created during the fracking process itself, and then the potential leaks from the pipelines that are needed to transport fracking from place to place.
Mm-hmm. Would the fracking happen here in Superior, or is that elsewhere? I guess I could have them describe how the plant works, but you tell me.
Right. Yeah. I think the utilities would probably have a clearer understanding of where and how, but the fracking will actually take place on a different site or sites and then be transported to Superior, Wisconsin for burning.
Mm-hmm. So going on with your rebuttal to the claims that it produces nearly a third less carbon dioxide than coal and almost half less than oil. What's wrong with the third less and a half less of carbon dioxide?
Absolutely. I can take a stab at this one, Jadeen. This is Jenna. We learned recently from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change climate report that called out methane specifically, which is the gas that is emitted through burning and transporting of fracked gas. They called that out specifically as an extremely potent greenhouse gas, which is more than 80 times as powerful as carbon dioxide pollution. So a fossil fuel power plant, such as a fracked gas power plant like NTEC, is really a really, really big climate polluter.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Jenna Yako and Jadeen Sanada of the Sierra Club. We're talking about the, and now you got me feeling a little bit nervous saying it here, the natural gas plant, or the gas plant that is slated for Superior, a joint venture of Minnesota Power and La Crosse-based Dairyland Power. And we're talking about the environmental impacts of it, and we'll hear from the other side, the proponents, to tell us why they think it's a good thing to happen. Is it something that you're just opposing here in Superior or anywhere? At the end of the day, people still do need energy, and are we ready completely yet with renewable sources? By the way, there's no end of windmill parts coming in the harbor, and we love this in Duluth Superior. You know, are we completely ready for those sources, and will that be enough? Or, as I'm sure the companies would argue, are bridge sources necessary?
This is Jadeen. Yeah, to the question about whether we need this gas or whether we need fossil fuels and whether we're ready, the technology is definitely there and continuing to develop. And when we look at it, it doesn't make a ton of sense to continue expanding fossil fuel infrastructure, even when looking at things like cost. There's a 2019 study that was published by the Rocky Mountain Institute that looked at 88 proposed gas plants and found that 90% of them, including NTEC, would be more costly than if the utilities that were proposing them invested instead in cleaner options like wind, solar, or energy efficiency. So there's really no reason not to make this cleaner transition, and we don't want to get ourselves entrenched with more fossil fuel infrastructure. If NTEC were built, we'd be, you know, locking ourselves into using it for the next couple decades.
This recently was reviewed by an appeals court in Minnesota, which came down favorably toward the plant. In short, they said, accordingly, substantial evidence supports the commission's determination that NTEC best serves the public interest. Jenna Yako, what are they getting wrong?
I'll respond that when Minnesota Power applied to Minnesota's Public Utilities Commission, the administrative law judge overseeing that application and case came out with the opposite conclusion, that NTEC is not needed for Minnesotans for energy, that it would be much more costly than clean renewable energy, and that it would be eventually a stranded asset that customers like myself would be paying for down the line. And I think there are differences between the two governing utility bodies in both states. But for me, it's immensely disappointing that we are still having conversations about if and when we should be building new fossil fuel power plants and infrastructure when my community has been experiencing poor air quality throughout the summer due to wildfires up north and in Canada because our climate is changing.
And Jenna, there's absolutely no question about the air quality lately. I am now at the point that I wake up in the morning and I first thing I do is sniff my air in my bedroom and try to determine whether or not this is one of those good days or bad days. So we take it one day at a time. Again, we are speaking with Jenna Yeko of the Sierra Club and her colleague, Jadine Sonata, also from the Sierra Club, Jenna from Duluth and Jadine from Madison. Lastly, is there a way to have a meeting of the minds? Is there any kind of a compromise? Is it this bridge source of energy or nothing? Is it fossil fuel or renewable, one or the other? Or is there any way to, if you sat down with the two industry representatives who we're talking to next, what could you agree on, Jadine?
I think that if I was sitting down with these two utilities, I think something that we could agree on is that, you know, clean energy is where the future is heading. It's where we need to be, both, you know, like environmental-wise, health-wise, cost-wise, for every reason. The only reason why we're kind of like stuck in this fossil fuel phase right now is because there's a lot of profit there, which will be, I think, decreasing as time goes on. It's just like the way things have been, and clean energy is the future. It's what we're going to be moving towards. So there, from my perspective, is no reason not to pursue that now.
All right. Jenna?
I would want to sit down with Minnesota Power and Dairyland leadership and ask them, what kind of future do you envision? What kind of world do you want to leave your children and grandchildren and future generations beyond ours? And I would ask Minnesota Power and Dairyland's leadership to really dig deep and think about what our communities deserve. Think about how the science is just incompatible with building new fossil fuel power plants and infrastructure. We know that a path to 100% renewable and clean energy is possible, and Minnesota Power and Dairyland can partner and help us get there.
All right. We've been speaking with Jenna Yeko and Jadine Sonata of the Sierra Club about the gas plant, we'll call it, proposed for Superior. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it, Robin.
And now, the other side. We're joined by John Carr, the Vice President of Power Supply for Dairyland Power Cooperative, speaking from La Crosse, and Josh Skelton, the Chief Operating Officer of Minnesota Power in Duluth. Hello, Josh and John.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Hello.
And I have to say, it was completely by accident that we ended up with Jenna and Jadine from the Sierra Club and Josh and John from the power companies. So, let me start by asking something that they said. I used the term natural gas, and they said, well, you know, we take a little exception to that because all gas is natural gas, just like all fossil fuels. Oil is natural oil and coal is natural coal. So they said it's a bit of a misnomer. This is to call it natural gas. That makes it sound a little bit more environmentally friendly. And in fact, like the other fossil fuels, it's treated and processed like everything else is. So do they have a point?
Well, hey, Robin, this is Josh. You know, certainly we didn't give the name natural gas. What we're looking for is a energy asset that can meet our needs on that end. So the genesis of the name natural gas, I don't know that I'm overly familiar with where that came from, but certainly this project presents opportunities for us to fuel on what is a natural gas asset and its capabilities to advance technology to other gas in the future, like hydrogen, are key attributes to the technology providers and an evolution that we'll be following closely as this project moves forward.
Sure. Fair enough. You did not name it. So, well, I think both of you term it as a bridge energy source between the more traditional fossil fuels and renewable sources. Why is a bridge necessary? And in fact, Josh, I would say we're familiar with Minnesota Power's wind operations because we see the windmill parts constantly coming into Duluth Superior Harbor, and we'd like that. I'm tempted to follow the trucks, by the way, to see exactly how, where they're taking them and how, because I know they can't just go on every road and every turn and certainly up the hill. But in any case, why not put all your energy, pun intended, toward renewable energy?
I can take that, Robin. This is John Carr. And, you know, from Darylin's perspective and my thoughts on that, you know, we do use the term a bridge fuel when we refer to natural gas. I think we also use the term renewable enabling. The renewable enabling piece for us with natural gas, these resources have the ability to sit idle and ready and waiting. So during those periods where the wind is blowing and production is very high and the sun is shining and production is very high and those resources are able to meet demand, that's great. But there are those periods of times where, you know, nighttime, for example, or some of these very warm days that we've seen recently where the wind isn't blowing as strong and it's very warm and demand for air conditioning is still very high. We have the ability to bring that natural gas plant into service and still provide reliable energy on demand. So we see it again as renewable enabling. It can go right back offline when the wind picks up or the sun comes out.
Mm-hmm. Josh, why Superior? You're Minnesota Power, and I guess...
Hey, Robin, before I jump to that, I just talking a little bit about how it fits into Minnesota's bridge is the, you know, we're very proud of our record. We're the first utility here in the state of Minnesota to reach a 50% renewable. So our transformation's been well underway. While we've been adding to your point of the awesome nacelles and turbine blades coming out of the harbor and working their way across the prairies and to different locations here in the United States, we've added a lot of wind. In addition to that, we're now looking to add up to 30 megawatts of solar. So, again, very proud of where we've been. But as we transition, we also have to keep that reliability high. Our customers in northern Minnesota have some of the highest demand around the clock. So 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We need to have that energy supply to maintain reliability, not just for our customers, but for the region. And certainly an asset like the proposed NTEC project fills in those voids, like John said, when the sun's not shining and the wind's not blowing. We need energy to help fill those voids to keep those customers safe, especially in the coldest of cold days and maybe in the warmest of warm spells like we've had here this summer.
Mm-hmm. So why Superior?
For Superior and Iron, it's a great location for many reasons. So Elite has a presence there with Superior Water, Light, and Power, who's also a customer of Minnesota Power. So relationship there. But its site itself, the site itself is an industrial site, shovel ready for a project like the NTEC project. So it has infrastructure already in place for natural gas. Its location actually does a lot to stabilize the grid for regional reliability. The interconnection is available there on the electrical infrastructure as well. And then we like that location with its presence to the Twin Ports trades, the skilled folks that can bring these projects from a thought and idea and a piece of paper into reality. So those are some reasons that we think Superior is a great location for a project like this.
Robin, this is John Carr. Also very important for Darylin is the willing partnership that we have with Elite and Minnesota Power that brings us in and allows us to participate in this project. We can achieve a scale in this resource that we might not be able to achieve on our own. The other big reason for us is the proximity to our service territory. So while we're not right there in Superior, Darylin is actually serving a large portion of Northwest Wisconsin. So just to the south and east, we are serving Bayfield Electric, Price Electric, Polk Burnett, Barron, and Jump River. These are co-ops in the Northwest segment of Wisconsin. So a lot of the rural area there is being served by Darylin, and the Superior location is an excellent fit for us for those reasons.
We're speaking with John Carr, the Vice President of Power Supply for Darylin Power, and Josh Skelton, Chief Operating Officer of Minnesota Power. You've just had a ruling in your favor last week by a Minnesota appeals court that reversed an opinion by an administrative law judge, and now you're headed up the further in the judicial ladder, I assume, where it could go back against you. Is all this worth it in the court, especially with the legal fees, versus, again, proceeding with wind or other solar or other renewables, which, as you mentioned, you're going to go to anyway? So is it worth the court battles, both in terms of cost and time? Josh Skelton of Minnesota Power?
You know, the Court of Appeals decision was an important step forward for Nemadji Trail Energy Center project. The Court of Appeals decision held strongly that they agreed with our record. In fact, it supported the decisions that were made by the MPUC to be a part of that portfolio to serve those customers going forward. So we believe it to be an important part of our achieving our transformation to more renewable sources and less focused on carbon. With our bold goal of getting to zero carbon emission by 2050, we need an incremental step to be 80% by 2035. The NTEC project helps us get there going further and faster by adding renewables and having a backstop to have dispatchable resource when it's required.
Mm-hmm. What about the time aspect? I know you have a deadline. You'd like to start construction on the plant. How long you'd have a legal battle going?
Well, it's important for us. This is Josh again. Important for us to follow our permits in hand, right? So we're ready to work on this project with Darylin. We've been working through the regulatory and legal proceedings with our intent to be commercial by 2025. So that's what's in our portfolio. We're working through that, but of course we need permits in hand, and we're going to work through answering all the questions in the regulatory processes in the legal processes as they come up, and hopefully we can hold on to our schedule, and that's our intent, is to deliver this energy when our customers need it most.
Yeah, you know, the timing is important here, and I think from Darylin's perspective here, we have retired our 345 megawatt coal-fired plant in Genoa. That was just done here June of this year. Not too long ago, we retired five units at our legacy Alma plant in Alma, Wisconsin. That was roughly 200 megawatts. We have added 180 megawatts of wind, another 25 megawatts of utility scale solar, and we have another 149 megawatts of solar that will be brought on in the next 2 years or so. But from our perspective, again, in this transition, the timing is very important. The need to have the resource there to reliably meet our members' requirements and to be there as a backup during those periods of time where we don't have the wind or sun available.
And lastly, outside of the courts, because it'd be nice if the world could continue outside of the courts, I asked the environmentalists if they would be willing to sit down with you. And so I would ask you the same thing. What would you propose to them if we had, let me get it straight here, Jenna, Jadeen, Josh, and John all together in a room? And what would you propose to them? And what sort of compromise do you think both sides could live with?
Well, this is Josh, Robin. I think from the very onset of this project, we've held a number of open houses. We're inviting to get those views and comments and concerns around our project. And then the regulatory and legal processes themselves invite additional public opinion. Where we can find common ground to deliver the energy and meet the needs of all of our stakeholders, we want to make sure we can find that path. And I think that's where we get to in these regulatory outcomes, these legal proceedings, allow us a way to meet those obligations. So I think we've had a very strong outreach through those very open, very public processes, and we continue to look for ways to always improve our project to serve all stakeholder needs.
This is John Carr at Darylin. From our perspective, we're always open to sitting down, having that thoughtful conversation in terms of planning. In fact, that typifies our cooperative business model. Right, working with our members to shape our future, concern for community, all those things. We'd be more than happy to have those conversations. Again, I think sitting down to have that conversation and making sure that we have a thoughtful measured, planned approach to transition to this lower carbon economy, lower carbon future. We're all for that, but we still have to meet our members' needs reliably and cost effectively here in the near term.
All right. We've been speaking with John Carr, the Vice President for Power Supply for Darylin Power Cooperative, and Josh Skelton, Chief Operating Officer of Minnesota Power. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Coming up, music to celebrate tugboats.
It's great to be here. It's kind of honored for me to be here because my great-great-grandfather was the captain of Etta G. And my grandpa, Mike Ojard, is currently working with Heritage Marine down in Superior. So there's a lot going on. So I'm going to play some tunes. Hope you enjoy it.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. For Etta Ojard to say there's a lot going on is a bit of an understatement. The occasion is the 125th birthday celebration of the venerable tugboat in Two Harbors, Minnesota, the Edna G. And Eddie's connection is not only as a descendant from a family of tugboat captains and operators, but as a musician and composer, which he's been doing for most of his 12 years. We caught up with him in Two Harbors on Saturday, next to the Edna G's berth. So we are speaking with
Etta Ojard, Edward Ojard.
And why are you here?
I'm here because I'm part of the Ojards. I'm Mike Ojard's grandson. And, you know, great-grandpa Harvey was kind of another person who was on the tugboats along with Adolf Ojard, who was the last captain of the Edna G. So it was kind of, you know, in the bloodline to do something with the tugboats and Ojards and stuff like that, you know.
And they retired it before you got the chance to be
the
captain.
Well, actually, my grandpa Mike is still working on the tugboat along with my dad, Patrick Ojard. And then they're still over at Superior there, just beyond the Blotnick Bridge. They're still working with the other tugs, Heritage Marines. So right now, my dad is busy with his work deal because along with tugboating, he also does railroading. So he's busy working with that right now. And my grandpa might be still down at the tug, too. So
what's the tugboat in Superior?
Tugboat over there, we have three of them over there, I believe. We have the Helen, we have the Edward, and then we have the Nels. And there's actually one here. You know what? That might be the Nels right there.
Oh.
Nels J.
Oh.
It's another one of our tugs we use to, like, help the ships around here get into the area to load the taconite pellets and stuff.
So how old were you the first time you got to go on one of them?
How old was I? I was probably really young. I don't remember, but maybe, like, when
you
I
have
get,
no memory of not being on one, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, I think it was 5 or 4. It was pretty young.
And now that you're not really young, how old are you?
12. I'm going to be 13 in about, like...
Happy birthday. Right?
Thank you.
So tell us about your music and what you just played.
I didn't introduce any of my pieces, but I did play one of my originals called Tugboats, and that's meant for all the single tugboats that we have here. You know, Edna G and the ones on the other side. So that's really nice. And I also did a little improvising in that piece, so.
Do you have that recorded anywhere?
Yes, I have a CD called Two Harbors, which includes that song, Tugboats. So pretty much the CD Two Harbors is just everything about Two Harbors. I wrote 14 pieces about everything, you know, tugboats, you know, Two Harbors Rag, Two Harbors Waltz, stuff like that. So, and it's available at, like, the Sweet Peas and...
Sweet Peas and Two Harbors.
Sweet Peas and Two Harbors, yeah.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, edwardhojard.com.
All right, it's Edward H. Ojard, that's OJARD.com. And let's hear Tugboats by Edward Ojard. And that was Tugboats by our guest, Edward H. Ojard of Two Harbors. We are speaking with him at the celebration of the 125th birthday of the tugboat, the Edna G, in Two Harbors. Eddie comes from a long line of tugboat captains and operators, both here and in Superior and the surrounding area. He's almost 13 years old. How long have you been making music?
Since I was 3, started composing at the age of 4. And I've been performing at nursing homes and whatnot at like the age of 8. It's nice getting out and performing nowadays after the COVID and stuff like that, so.
Right, I'm not asking you to play favorites, but which is a favorite, music or tugboats?
I'm not gonna say, they're equal.
What else could I expect, right? This is probably a ridiculous question since they're all pretty, okay, to the layperson they look pretty much the same, but do you have a favorite? Is there a difference?
Honestly, you should ask my grandpa and my dad because they know the tugs, like, because they work on it so much, you know, they know the engines, they know what the tug likes and what it doesn't like, so they would honestly know more than I do, but I think my favorite is just the Edward. It's named after my grandpa, and now it's named after me, so it's my favorite.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Is it the Edward O?
Edward H, because Edward Harvey Ojard was my great-grandpa, and so now I'm Edward Ho Ojard. So it's still the same initials, but it's just kind of nice now. know.
I got you. No, that's no slight to the Edna G, though.
No, yeah, yeah, so.
Any favorite Edna G memories?
Once when I was really young, I actually helped out with the touring stuff, like help people go around the tug and stuff like that. I remember that the most, and it was fun. I love that.
Well, in honor of Eddie's hometown and his skills as a keyboard virtuoso, let's hear his composition, Two Harbors Rag. And that was Two Harbors Rag by our guest, Edward H. Ojard. We're speaking with Eddie at the celebration in Two Harbors that we're recording on Saturday, August 28th, for the 125th birthday of the tugboat, the Edna G. So in the concert you just gave, Eddie, you didn't play any sea shanties. Although I have to say, some of the popular tunes you covered sounded a little
sea shanty-ish there.
Yeah, I know, right? Sometimes I just arrange them differently towards what my keyboard is able to do. I mean, I still try to keep it as close to the song as possible, but
everyone has their interpretation.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear one of those covers to take us out. Here's Eddie Ojard's version of My Way. Eddie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hello, Robin.
So, Brooks, the haze seems to have gone away from the wildfires, at least when I look out at the sky this morning, Thursday as we're recording this, but the sky still might be dangerous.
Yes, unfortunately, a storm on Saturday brought a lightning strike that exploded a spire on a Central Hillside church in Duluth. It caused about $185,000 in damage at Hope City Church, which longtime residents probably know better as St. Joseph's Church on 5th Street. So I talked to the pastor this week, and he said that, you know, our faith in God tells us he's got a plan in this. The pastor was not upset or despairing about this. He was actually relieved that the event was bringing the community together. People came out to an outdoor church service on Sunday after the lightning strike. And many, many people have reached out saying, you know, how can I help? How can I help? The church is insured. They're still looking at damages. No one can go inside just yet, but they are looking at what comes next, long-term plans, and the pastor is upbeat about the outpouring of support that has happened since then. It's the second strike at a Duluth church in 3 years, actually. I found out there was one in July 2018 as well that extensively damaged that Piedmont church.
Well, this could mean bolts of lightning are really connected to divine intervention. Did I speak too soon, by the way, about the wildfires? Are they under control?
Well, far more so than the last time we spoke. The Greenwood fire that's burning near Isabella, Minnesota, on more than 25,000 acres, is now 37% contained. So that is much better than the weeks of 0% containment we've seen thus far. We got big help from the weekend rains, which brought lightning, yes, but also some needed moisture up in that tinder dry forest. As a result, portions of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness will reopen on Saturday. So that's good news for folks who still want to get out this fall, I suppose. And actually, the Greenwood Fire, officials think it will be under complete control by October 10th.
All right. Well, Danny, from fire to water, what's the latest on that plan to bottle our beautiful Wisconsin water?
Yeah, so on Thursday of last week, a five-member appeals board in Bayfield County unanimously upheld the denial of a special land use permit for Crystal Myshak and Robert Glau. And as you know, they're planning to harvest and sell water from their property in the town of Clover, which most people refer to as the town of Herbster. And basically, they're arguing that the county doesn't have authority or jurisdiction over this permit, even though they applied for it. Their attorney for these two that want to bottle and sell water from a well in the town of Clover, they're saying that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has sole permitting authority over groundwater wells. But the town's attorney, Max Lindsay, argues that the county is just exercising their authority over the land use, that this proposal doesn't qualify for a permit because it lies in an area that's zoned for residential development or recreational use. And so now this issue will be appealed to Bayfield County Circuit Court. And project opponents are pretty upset about this proposal. They feel that it basically gets around a sweeping agreement governing water use in the Great Lakes Basin. You know, in 2008, eight Great Lakes governors signed the Great Lakes Compact, which prevents large-scale water diversions outside the Great Lakes Basin with limited exceptions. But the compact does allow water to be removed from the Great Lakes Basin in containers of 5.7 gallons or less. And with Myshak's proposal, you know, they would truck 1 to 2 tanker trucks a day to a facility in Superior to bottle water. And because Superior is still in the Lake Superior Basin, essentially that's not an issue. And so when they sell that in these smaller containers, it doesn't qualify as a diversion. But that has really upset tribes and environmental groups. And now we're seeing people who are saying that if this proposal were to move forward, it could set a dangerous precedent and allow for other large businesses or corporations to come in and draw water from these unique artesian wells or lead to pumping of groundwater in northern Wisconsin.
Well, last week you reported on a potential undercount in the census of Wisconsin's Native American tribes. What do the numbers look like overall for the region?
Well, up here in northern Wisconsin, there were some counties that saw gains, and that's kind of defying this trend that we are seeing in recent years of rural counties that are losing population. You know, between 2010 and 2018, a lot of rural counties, including in northern Wisconsin, lost residents compared to the state's more urban areas like Madison and Milwaukee. But in this most recent census count, we saw counties like Burnett and Bayfield. They both gained about 1,000 people since the 2010 census, and they now have populations of roughly 16,000. And Sawyer County also saw a gain of about 1,500 people. Other counties like Douglas County and Ashland County remain largely the same, although Ashland County did see a slight decline of about 100 people. And Iron County, which has the smallest population of any county in the state, saw slight gains. They added about a couple of hundred people to their population of roughly 6,100 now. So it's interesting to see that some areas of northern Wisconsin are seeing gains while others are seeing losses. And, you know, overall, statewide, Wisconsin's population grew about 3.6%, and most of that growth was centered in Madison, which grew nearly 16% from the last census. But the city of Milwaukee actually lost about 17,000 people in the last decade, so not all large cities are seeing growth.
Well, back to you, Brooks. Even with the gain in population in our region, we still have a shortage of workers, and I'm hearing there's a labor shortage in a job that everyone wants.
Well, supposedly everyone wants it, but right now we need at least 8 more Zamboni drivers to refresh ice at Amsoil Arena and the deck. You know, ahead of hockey season, the deck is putting out this call to say, hey, we, you know, after our closure last year because of the pandemic and a lot of layoffs, they haven't been able to rebuild that Zamboni staff. So starting this week, they really start to get busy. And, you know, they have started picking up some part-time drivers, but they are still looking for full-time Zamboni operators to get out on the ice and, you know, get into that Gear Daddy song.
Yeah, I want to drive the Zamboni.
All right, well, here's your chance, Brooks.
I want to drive, you know, I can't.
All right, we'll stick with our day jobs. So, well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior Base reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team, not the Zamboni driver yet. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Edward H. Ojard. Stay safe, everyone.